You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The World Bank Institute estimates that corporations spend $1 trillion in business bribes worldwide every year. And although bribery has been illegal in the United States since 1977, little has been done to stop the practice until recently. In a documentary called Black Money that will air on PBS tomorrow night at 9 on the Frontline series, investigative journalist Lowell Bergman looks into that shadowy side of international business and sheds light on some of the multinational companies that routinely make secret payments to win billions of dollars in business. And I'm very pleased that it brings Lowell Bergman back to the show. Hi, Lowell.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay. What led Congress to pass the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act in 1977?
Well, if you remember the famous Watergate hearings, towards their end, a variety of CEOs of major corporations were brought in, and they testified to how they delivered cash to the committee to reelect the president, President Nixon at the time. It turned out on further investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which was wondering how do these publicly traded companies account for these cash payments, they discovered that 500 major corporations had spent hundreds of millions of dollars over the previous 3 or 4 years on international bribery, that the funds that were used to put into the Nixon reelection campaign came from slush funds they maintained to bribe public officials all around the world. This led to a series of other hearings and international scandals involving the Japanese and other governments when it turned out that they were all being bribed. And so we passed the first law that made it illegal to pay a bribe in international commerce, that is, pay a bribe to an official in another country. Until that happened and was signed into law, it was a tax deduction in the United States for a company to pay a bribe, let's say, of a politician in Canada or in Africa or anywhere in the world.
Did any businesses protest that it would make them less competitive?
Major corporations at the time did protest. They were, as many people realized, at a disadvantage themselves at that point because of all these revelations. And so it's very difficult for a politician, let's say a congressman, to be against a law that outlaws bribery. And so the law passed. And it took another 20 years before the law was internationalized by a treaty involving the OECD, which is basically the European Union, the Japanese, and other developed countries.
So for 20 years, American businesses, at least the ones that live by the law, were at an unfair disadvantage because European companies and Japan, et cetera, they could all bribe.
Well, not only could they bribe, but they all could continue to deduct those bribery payments. As we now know, let's say in the case of the Siemens Corporation in Germany, they were spending at least $1 billion every 4 years on bribery as part of their normal budget. So, yes, they were at a disadvantage, and the treaty that came about in 98 only began to be implemented in early in this century, and it's still in progress. The U.S. still is the big enforcer in the world. We now have 100 investigations going on right now out of the Justice Department covering companies all over the world.
Have we been following those cases all along over the 32 years, or is this something that's picked up recently?
Well, it has been followed with a very, very small group of dedicated prosecutors. But in the last 4 or 5 years, the FBI has got into the act. They are now running undercover operations around the world and wiretapping operations using all of their tools in this area. And the U.S. government, very much below the radar, has been increasing the enforcement effort.
Although it's ironic that the former FBI director, Louis Freeh, is representing the Saudi royal family in one of these bribery investigations, which we'll get into later.
Well, it is unusual.
Recently, the Siemens company, which you mentioned, was forced to pay $1.6 billion in fines. Is that the largest in modern corporate history?
They paid over $800 million in the United States. That was a record for any corporation, and they've spent somewhere around $500 million or more in Germany, where the German prosecutors went after them first.
What could they have done to have incurred fines, I guess, that are somewhere around $2.6 billion?
Well, I think the fines and costs to Siemens are still to be added up because they're supposed to reform the way they do business and maintain an internal monitoring system. Basically, the Siemens Corporation, especially after the Second World War, in order to compete with General Electric in particular, who was their main competitor, and to get over the legacy of their reputation during the war, began paying bribes as a matter of corporate policy. So they had an international network, and once Germany signed the treaty in 1998 and then passed some laws to implement it in the years that followed, they maintained that system. They didn't stop doing it. They just set up a more clandestine way of doing it. They couldn't any longer deduct it on their taxes. And as you'll see in the documentary, Reinhard Sikacek, who was the keeper of the slush funds for Siemens, details both there and, by the way, on our website, The Business of Bribes, which is a website on the PBS.org frontline site. On the website, you can see more of his interview where he talks about how they did it. He handled somewhere around $600 million himself over a four-year period.
$40 to $50 million a year, in fact, was what his budget amounted to.
Right, for him.
And he said it was about keeping the business unit alive and not jeopardizing thousands of jobs overnight.
Exactly. And what that means in places like Bangladesh, what that means in places like Nigeria, is generally inferior equipment and no way really to monitor what's going on in those countries with those projects that they're involved in.
Now, there are some really big names that are being pursued by the Justice Department now. Daimler, Halliburton, Albert J. Stanley, who is a former chief executive of the KBR subsidiary of Halliburton, recently pled guilty to charges of paying bribes and skimming millions for himself.
Well, the KBR case and the case of its then-CEO, Albert Stanley, Jack Stanley, as he's known, is an emblematic case because it's taken many years for that to unravel. It involves five or six different countries at least in terms of the nature of the investigation and where it led and where the money went. The bottom line is that this is a record prison sentence for the CEO of a major corporation for violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. It turned out that while Stanley was paying a $180 million bribe with a consortium of companies from France and Japan and Italy, that he also skimmed the bribe and took about $5 million of that for himself, which got into a Swiss bank account. He got another $5.5 million because he was also involved in a bid-rigging conspiracy around the world with Kellogg Brown and Root and skimmed those payments as well.
And then Johnson & Johnson, what were they bribing people for, to get them to buy more Q-tips?
To buy products. They're under investigation. There hasn't been an adjudication yet of that case.
I'm talking with Lowell Bergman, whose latest Frontline show is called Black Money. It'll be airing tomorrow night on PBS at 9, and it's a joint investigation of Frontline, ProPublica, and the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley. You interviewed Stanley Sporkin, who was in charge of enforcement at the SEC, and he said that he found 500 American companies had spent hundreds of millions of dollars bribing everyone from prime ministers to police, and it was not illegal. So
that was 30 years ago.
That was before 1977. I'm assuming that bribery has continued. It's just seen as the price of doing business.
Well, there are no doubt U.S. companies we know that are continuing to bribe because the Justice Department, in this new sort of enhanced enforcement mode, it doesn't seem to be running out of cases. And as a result, for instance, the FBI has created a dedicated squad just to international corruption. If you talk with the people involved, they'll tell you it's nice to have some more resources, but they have more than they can handle. So and that's primarily U.S. companies that they're normally investigating. So there's plenty going on. The question is, there's been an international movement to expand enforcement with other countries getting involved. And they're at a critical juncture right now as to where that's going to go.
Now, they only go after the person who is doing the bribery, not the recipient of the bribe.
Well, that would make sense simply because it would theoretically be illegal, let's say, in the country where the person took the bribe for that person to take the bribe. If the penalties for bribery exist in every country in the world. It's the idea of bribing an official in another country in other words, trying to get under control the exploitation of other countries in international commerce.
The primary focus of your documentary is the investigation of British Aerospace, or BAE. Was it likely they were bribing foreign politicians even before the Al-Yamama incident, the deal of the in the 1980s?
Well, we have a lot of evidence that BAE around the world was operating a payment system through commission agents, with what they call them, intermediaries, to get arms contracts. Documents related to this, both in the U.S. files and reports of it from around the world, would be too voluminous to mention here. That they range from South Africa to Sweden, from Czechoslovakia to Tanzania. And so in the deal involving Saudi Arabia, which starts out about 20-some-odd years ago, 25 years ago, the fact that there might be bribes being paid in that deal was like an open secret in Britain. We're talking about an $80 billion arms deal involving fighter aircraft and all the attendant support for that. And those rumors continued with various reports here and there for a number of years, until finally in 2003, a British travel agent who had been employed by BAE to help take care of some of the Saudi royal family came out of the shadows and talked to a reporter at Britain's Guardian and presents us with in the film with a way to show the interaction between the press, the public, in this case a whistleblower, and then the government of Great Britain in an attempt to do something about it.
Now, this arms deal was negotiated when Margaret Thatcher was prime minister, and then many people benefited over the years, and any number of prime ministers probably were also aware. How political was this?
Well, the origins of the deal are in Ronald Reagan realizing in the early 1980s that the Saudis were not going to be able to buy advanced U.S. fighters given opposition in Congress. So he directed the then Saudi ambassador to the United States, Prince Bandar bin Sultan, to go talk to Margaret Thatcher. According to Prince Bandar, and as you would see on camera in the documentary, when he got to see Margaret Thatcher, she was just waiting for him. Here was a nice, big, fat deal with tens of thousands of jobs for people in the United Kingdom, no problems from the Israeli lobby in Congress, and as a result, it went forward under the terms that the Saudis like, complete secrecy.
Prince Bandar declined to speak to you about this story, but you asked him some years back about the morality of bribery. What did he tell you?
Well, you have to actually experience that answer, I think, when you watch the documentary. It would be very difficult for me to represent it other than to say that he gets into biblical explanations as to the problem of bribery, insisting that they, the Saudis, are not so bad. And that presentation is brought up to date in an interview that we got more or less in the documentary film business at the last minute, more of which, by the way, we will be posting on the web tomorrow before the documentary airs, with former FBI Director Louis Free, who comes forward to not only represent Prince Bandar's point of view, but go on camera.
We will take a little break, and we'll come back with more from Lowell Bergman, whose latest show for the Frontline series is called Black Money. It airs tomorrow on PBS at 9 o'clock here in New York. And it is a joint investigation by PBS Frontline, ProPublica, and the Investigative Reporting Program at UC Berkeley. Stay with us. We're back with investigative journalist Lowell Bergman, whose latest project is a documentary called Black Money, which airs tomorrow night on Channel 13 here in New York at 9 o'clock as part of the Frontline series. A listener wants you to define the word bribe.
An illicit payment for a service that would not necessarily be offered otherwise.
You mentioned Peter Gardner earlier. He is a high-end travel agent who worked in London when the BAE deal, the Al-Yamama deal, was signed. The Al-Yamama, standing for the Dove, Why would an arms deal be called the Dove?
Why is the War Department called the Defense Department?
Okay. So he was, how did he get involved in this whole story?
Mr. Gardner was, as described, a high-end travel agent in the Mayfair District of London and handled Saudi clients, including the family, one of the relatives of Prince Bandar, the Turki Nasser clan, and when they came to visit in London. And then one day, as he describes it, in the late 1980s, he was told that from that day forward, all the billings for the services for Prince Turki Nasser, Turki bin Nasser and his family, he was then the deputy commander of the Saudi Air Force, were going to be paid by BAE, British Aerospace. And it was an unusual relationship, as he put it, and he presents the documents behind his tale, documents which substantiate what he's saying. And basically, the documents are very interesting because, on the one hand, he would obviously have his own accounting records, which was, let's say, rental of a floor of the Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles for a month. But what he would submit to BAE was almost a clean sheet of paper with support services, BAE account, $100,000. And he did that from the late 80s until 2002, when Britain, in the wake, and 9/11 had an effect on the enforcement of these laws because it tightened up many countries, Britain included, passed money laundering laws, laws that track funding and make with severer penalties, initially with the motivation of tracking terrorist financing. But this affected this kind of payment system, and Britain also passed an anti-bribery law as well in international commerce. So at that point, he found himself, as he put it, faced with either continuing and doing illegal activity or trying to get on the right side of the question, because, as he says, BAE then came to him at that same time and asked him to set up a, quote, offshore operation, that is, continue your services, but we don't want them done in the same way. We want them hidden. And so he stepped forward.
You asked Gardner, if he ever asked BAE, why it was set up that way.
And he says, they said, that it's a country-to-country arms contract, and it's very secret, and this is the way business is going to be done.
But the amazing thing is some of the stuff that this money was spent on, $100 million to this one man, Prince Turki bin Nasser, to pay for things like shipping a Rolls Royce or the things that his girlfriends bought on shopping trips to Los Angeles on
a
740. Should we?
As well as his family.
Well, yeah. He seemed to have a bunch of mistresses and an expensive family. And he would rent a 747 and then charge it to BAE. I mean, this is profligacy of an extraordinary level.
Well, this was to be a completely, and still is, except for what's come out in the press and through some investigations, a secret deal. There was no public accounting. In fact, because the funds actually go through the British Ministry of Defense as part of the way this was set up, involved selling oil, and then the proceeds of the oil were used to pay for it. It is described as, and everyone agrees, an off-the-books deal, that it is not part of the official budget of the Saudi Ministry of Defense, although their accounts are involved. They explain that one. That was always a difficult one for me. But on top of that, even in the British part of it, the public accounting of this deal was a state secret and is a state secret today.
Now, the British Secret Fraud Office, I love the name.
Serious Fraud. It's a Monty Python office. Name, yes, I know.
They looked into the allegations and they found serious fraud, and they were forced to drop the investigation.
Well, it goes even a step further than that. Britain has always had a difficulty investigating and prosecuting what we call white-collar crime. The Serious Fraud Office is the agency within their justice system that is supposed to do those investigations. And they were supposedly having a renewed effort to reinvigorate this kind of, or invigorate this kind of prosecution and investigation. So the fact that this was the biggest investigation they ever had going of the biggest trade deal in the history of Britain, and it was closed down by the prime minister at the moment where the Saudis started to complain. Sent real shivers through the British legal system and internationally, because you see the law involved is part of a treaty that was that has been making some progress in terms of its enforcement towards trying to clean up the way in which business is done around the world.
And the people who were running the Serious Fraud Office were forced to leave. Helen Garlick, the former assistant director of the Serious Fraud Office, who you interviewed for the show, has joined Nardello and Company, I'm informed, which is an international investigations firm. And they are looking into these kinds of things. But they're a private company, aren't they?
They're a private company. She resigned from the office after supervising this investigation for the better part of 4 years, after the decision was made to drop it on the grounds that the Saudis would withdraw cooperation, or at least that was the threat, in the war on terror.
So why is there a private company doing this? Is it because government can't do it well?
Well, I don't know that they're directly involved in this case. There are a number of companies. Nardello is one. You know, the more common name you hear is Kroll. There are a number of private investigation and corporate, what would be called corporate risk management companies that have sprung up all over the world, and former prosecutors joined them. But I don't believe that Ms. Garlick is still involved in this.
My guest is Lowell Bergman, who's Black Money is airing on PBS tomorrow night at 9. It's part of the Frontline series. It's about international bribery. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Just a couple of months ago, BAE became the Pentagon's fifth largest defense contractor. BAE worked on prime contracts valued at $12.3 billion in the year that ended September 30th, 2008, up from around $10 billion in prime contracts a year earlier. Should the Pentagon be doing that much business with a company that's being investigated for corruption?
Well, a number of arms companies have been investigated, and some have actually been found guilty, like Lockheed or Northrop in the past. General Electric for bribing the Israeli Air Force to buy their engines, for example. So companies can still do business with a felony record, with the Pentagon. It's a question of whether or not under the procedures that are in the U.S. or whether they get debarred. At this date, BAE has not been convicted of anything, and we should point that out. They are under investigation, which they acknowledge, and they have actually spent quite a bit of money trying to reform the way they do business. I know that I think it was a year and a half ago, they announced with much fanfare that they had finally adopted a corporate ethics policy and were going to dismiss hundreds of commission agents that they have around the world. They're clearly concerned about what may happen in this case because they do produce almost all the armored vehicles for the U.S. military right now. They bought most of those companies in the U.S. They're involved in various electronic warfare operations with the Pentagon in terms of supplying equipment. And in fact, based on their latest public filings, most of their business is done with the Pentagon today. They are really a U.S. arms manufacturer still headquartered in Great Britain.
Defense contractors often find defenders in Congress because they are concerned that anything that shuts down a contract would mean loss of jobs back home. How many people is BAE employing in the United States, do we know?
You know, 40,000 approximately.
Uh-huh. And in the UK?
They're a major employer, and so Senator McConnell, for instance, there's a small BAE operation in Louisville, Kentucky, and he's already made some statements over the last year or so concerned about their viability and just the 300 or 400 jobs in his community. So there is always that issue, and there was that issue in Britain as well when the investigation was going on.
Will
we lose business?
Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell, one of the leaders of the Republican Party.
He is the leader in the Senate, yes.
With the global financial downturn continuing and pressure for profits increasing on corporations around the world, should we expect to see more companies engaging in bribery, whether it's legal or not?
Well, that's the next sort of major area, some of which we're going to cover in our website, the business of bribes on the PBS.org frontline site, where you'll find a lot more material and a lot more interviews. In answer to your question, the fact of the global downturn is causing a lot of anxiety in international anti-bribery, anti-corruption units, whether they're connected to the World Bank or the OECD in Europe, or in private groups like Transparency International, because obviously if there is more and more pressure to get jobs or get contracts or get natural resources in an economic downturn, companies are going to get more desperate. One is a speculation. The other part of this is that while there are 38 countries that have now signed this treaty, there are many countries that haven't. China, India, amongst them, and particularly the Chinese way of doing business appears to be business without any rules. And that is causing great anxiety to those who enforce these laws, fearful that major multinational companies, particularly, for example, the oil companies or the mining sector, will become more evasive, let's say, in the way they do business and the way they may or may not be making payments.
And in the case of China and many of the other companies, they're doing business with third world countries. Aren't the victims of bribery in some way the people living in poverty in the developing world in countries rich in resources but dominated by corrupt governments?
Well, we're going to be doing a follow-up piece, actually, for public television on Nigeria in particular and what happened with Halliburton, but also what's happening internally in Nigeria, where for the first time they had a very active anti-corruption prosecution unit, which has been completely disbanded. And Nigeria is one example. In Nigeria, it's estimated that they've produced $600 billion in oil revenues over the last 30 years, but over half of that has disappeared in bribery and corruption schemes. In just the BAE example, there is a $28 million radar system that was sold to Tanzania. Apparently a radar system, according to hearings in the British House of Commons, that the country, Tanzania, did not need, had very little use for. A $12 million bribe was paid. This isn't a country where people live on less than a dollar a day. And as one of the Nigerian officials we've interviewed says, this prosecutor who just, by the way, fled the country after two assassination attempts, the problem is that in these countries where these bribes are paid, people die. There are either less or fewer medical services available. The drinking water systems are not improved. And so in the direct living standards of the people involved, there's a direct effect of this bribery.
What do you think the impact will be on the recent agreement by some of the companies, the countries that have engaged in secretive banking practices like Switzerland, Liechtenstein, et cetera, to be a bit more forthcoming? Do you think that that will make this whole process a bit more transparent?
Well, the Swiss were becoming more transparent on this issue, on the corruption and bribery issue, because they signed the treaty. In the past, when a request was made, let's say, by the United States for assistance in involving international bribery or corruption case in commerce, the Swiss wouldn't cooperate because they didn't have a similar law. And that's usually the way that these matters are worked out, whether there's parity in terms of the law in one country versus another. The Swiss do have a law. They were about, for example, to hand over the Saudi accounts to the British investigators. And that was the critical moment where the Saudis went to Downing Street and threatened the prime minister. And now the Swiss have been asked to hand over those same accounts to the U.S. Justice Department, and it's our information that they've been very slow in complying. Off the record, through sources, we're being told that the Swiss government's reluctance is, why should we stick our neck out with the Saudis, big clients of their banks, if in fact in the end the British government folded its cards? Won't the Americans too?
And the Americans have had a very close relationship with the Saudis, especially Prince Bandar, who's been friends with any number of presidents, including the last president, George Bush. I'd imagine the United States does not want to endanger its close relationship with Saudi Arabia, the major supplier of petroleum.
At the same time, American officials that I've interviewed, people in the Pentagon, veterans of Saudi Arabia and the military, will all tell you stories about how the money is handled around these various deals and what the Saudis require, both in terms of having to a member of the royal family involved if you have a what's called an offset project to a U.S. military deal. An offset project meaning they buy a fighter plane, but there's an equal amount of money in the building of the housing for the people who have to maintain it, the hangars to maintain that, the aircraft itself and the runways and so on. And so once you get to Saudi Arabia, there are these unusual deals that you have to agree to. By the way, most businessmen and most government officials we've talked with all agree that having to deal with bribery is just really ridiculous on a lot of levels and an ethical affront. They'd rather not. So the question is going to be sooner or later, are we going to have transparency in the way we do business, whether it's collecting taxes and allowing people to evade them by going offshore or in using those same systems to make illegal payments?
We've been talking about a joint investigation of international bribery by PBS's Frontline program, ProPublica, and the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley with investigative journalist Lowell Bergman, who does most of the questioning on the show and also provides the voiceover. It is broadcast tomorrow night at 9 on Channel 13 here in New York, and then I assume it'll be available at other times on that channel and other PBS stations. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.